It's talking news with Fuse, so his ratings don't dive. It's the moment you've waited for. Here comes Jeff Flack's Live. The left really hates him and he's ready to fight, but the joke's on them because so does the right. Here comes Jeff Flack's Live. You can't top him, don't try to stop him. Here comes Jeff Flack's Live.
To Jeff Flack's Live. Normally, well, actually, you're not really listening live. It's almost live. Almost live. We're usually live at this time, 9 p.m. on Wednesday night on 620 AM WSNR. And the legendary Zev Brenner Talkline Network, talklinenetwork.com. Normally, tonight we are not live because 620 had special programming and we got preempted from the live show. So we're going straight to podcast this week. So it's a almost live. I mean, I'm recording it right around 9 o'clock, but we're going to upload it right afterwards. And we are on the podcast tonight. So welcome to the first ever straight to podcast episode of Jeff Flack's Live. We're glad to have you with us and probably will be on tomorrow night at 10 p.m. and definitely again next week at 9 p.m. on 620 WSNR. Welcome to the show. Now, tonight we have Rafaela Guns with us shortly. We're going to get to her in just a minute. Such a courageous young lady who started CUNY Law School a couple years ago, had a bright, very bright future. You'll hear she's a highly intelligent young lady and, you know, started with all great intentions and had so many aspirations. And she was really at that time Zionist agnostic, as you'll hear her talking about. But even just being Zionist agnostic made her an evil Zionist perpetrator and oppressor, according to Nordine Kiswani, who was actually in her law school class, in Rafaela's law school class. And Nordine and her comrades, as Nordine refers to, harassed Rafaela to the point that she had to leave the school. So we're going to hear her. So now Rafaela, just to show you that she's been acknowledged and heralded for her courage, she was one of the Allgemeiner J100 this past year. And I can't say enough about the courage that it takes to come forward with something like this, because there's very little good to come of something with coming out with a story like this, except that you're trying to do good in the world and get rid of anti-Semitism. And that's the only reason why she came forward with this. And I'm looking forward to being able to share her horrifying story, but hopefully we can do something about it with action. So we'll get to Rafaela and her story in just a minute. I want to acknowledge also the fine, amazing, incredible people at Gray's Smokehouse here in Cedarhurst, which is very near where I live. Now, I'm keto. I am strict, clean keto. I must be. And I don't have sugar. I do not have sugar. Never believed in having sugar anyway or carbs, but now I'm really strict with keto. And one of the great snacks that us keto people have is jerky, beef jerky. And, you know, good beef jerky is amazing. But kosher, keto, beef jerky, no. Doesn't it? And every time I looked at a package, 9 grams of sugar, 8, 11, 15, some of the really sweet ones had crazy amounts of sugar. Beef jerky, for God's sakes. And it doesn't need it, good beef jerky. So I called Gray Smokehouse one day and they started making totally customized keto jerky for me. But it turned out to be too much. It's just, you need to make big batches of it. And it was just a lot and I couldn't consume all of it. It's too much. And so I reached out to my good friend, Elon Kornblum's group, Great Kosher Restaurant Foodies, and I crowdsourced, do people want to go into this with me and get keto jerky? Is anyone else not eat sugar and is on keto? And I couldn't believe the turnout. So many people got back to me. And so we started a WhatsApp chat. And now we have tons of people, like, I don't know, maybe 2 dozen people who are ordering beef jerky from Gray Smokehouse. Now they have a whole line. They're doing different flavors now of keto jerky every week. And I got to tell you, I got my first shipment, my second actually shipment today of the keto jerky. It was un-freaking believable. It was a jalapeno jerky. Wasn't too hot. Soft, not too soft. It actually, I gotta be honest, I'm not just saying this, it was absolutely the best jerky I've ever had. I begged them to send me more, and I begged them to keep making this flavor, and I hope they will. So shout out to the amazing people at Gray Smokehouse. They're going to hopefully be coming on as a new sponsor. We'll have them on the next show live. But I also have a special code if anybody wants us. And I don't believe this code even exists anywhere. So it's like one of these. It's not one of these codes where you're using the code just to get the regular price. No. There's a regular price for this stuff. You're using my code, you're getting a price no one else is, as far as I understand it. And I believe the code is just going live right now as we go on the air. So if you go on holyjerky.com, holyjerky.com, or even if you want to stop in the store here in Cedarhurst, just say Jeff10. Give them the code Jeff10. I heard about you on the Jeff Lax Live show. You will get 10% off of anything. Not just jerky, but anything, I believe. I hope. I hope they will now, now that I've said it. If it's a mistake, I hope they'll honor it. But I believe it's mainly for the jerky. But not just sugar-free jerky, but any jerky. But I can't recommend the sugar-free keto jerky highly enough. So again, go to holyjerky.com or stop in Gray Smokehouse and just tell them Jeff10. You'll get my code 10% off. Now, without further ado, I want to get to the courageous, amazing, and super impressive Rafaela Guns right after this.
This is Robert from Gray Smokehouse. Come in anytime to try our food or try our famous beef jerky. Not in town? Order at holyjerky.com. We ship nationwide, charcuterie boards, baggies, anything under the sun. Holyjerky.com, your one-stop shop for all your jerky needs. Also, we have now added a new keto line for Jeff himself.
It's totally true. They added an entire keto jerky line just for me. You want keto jerky? Kosher jerky? This is the only place to get legitimate keto jerky. And you can get 10% off if you use my code Jeff10. That's Jeff10 at holyjerky.com. Do it now. What are you waiting for, jerky? And welcome back to the special live edition of Jeff Lax Live on the podcast show. Not on the live radio this Wednesday night. We will be on live tomorrow at 10, and of course next Wednesday night at 10. Welcome to the show. Now, a couple of things I want to get to right before we get to Rafaela Guns. And one of them is I want to talk a little bit about this petition that my group at CUNY started. Now, a lot of you have been hearing, unfortunately, in the news about all the anti-Semitism. You'll hear some of it tonight with Miss Guns, but all the other anti-Semitism going on at CUNY. So I wanted to talk just very, very briefly before we get to the interview about a petition that we started on ipetitions.com, I believe is the website. Let me just look it up, make sure I get it right. It is ipetitions.com. And actually, if you go to the homepage, it actually is on the homepage now. We started a petition to demanding that CUNY adopt the IHRA definition, the IHRA, International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism. And the name of the petition is End Jew Hatred at CUNY. End Jew Hatred at CUNY. Demand that CUNY adopt the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. So I urge anybody listening to this, please go on to ipetitions.com, click on that and sign it. You'll be doing such a great thing for the fight and scourge of anti-Semitism around the world. Now, without further ado, here's Rafaela Guns. You know, I'm really grateful to have with me someone who I consider to be a real hero. Rafaela Guns was a former CUNY law student, and she's going to talk about her experience there today. She's currently a writer and a social work student from New York City, and she went to CUNY Law School. We're gonna discuss her story. But first of all, Rafaela, I really want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today about what happened.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Let me start with a little bit about your background. Before we get into this, you know, terrible story and what you went through, tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from, what made you decide to go to law school, and what made you decide to pick CUNY Law School?
Okay, so I have a background in journalism. I'm from the Bronx. I went to the New School for undergrad and graduated in 2016 with a major in journalism, a minor in gender studies. I worked as a freelance journalist for a few years, about 3 years, before deciding to go back to school. I covered mainly feminist issues, LGBTQ issues, things of that nature. And, you know, I just unfortunately was not able to get a full-time job. All my gigs were part-time or freelance. So I figured I needed to go back to school, but I still wanted to do something that was helpful to the communities that I was covering and advocating for in my writing. So I decided to go to law school, and CUNY Law, on top of being affordable, had a reputation for being a progressive, human rights sort of driven space. So I figured because I, you know, care about women's issues, I care about LGBT issues, and yes, I care about Jewish issues. After the incident in 2017 at the Chicago Dyke March, where Jewish lesbians were evicted from the parade for carrying pride flags with Stars of David on it because it looked too Israeli and Zionist.
Right.
They were kicked out, and I, you know, sort of started to advocate on behalf of the Jewish people, which, you know, I've always been part of, but, you know, growing up in New York and, you know, looking pretty white and being, you know, a relatively secular Jew, it didn't really impact me until I saw the anti-Semitism in communities that I was advocating for and that I was part of, such as the LGBT community, because I'm bisexual myself. So, I don't know, it was just sort of hurtful to see from my own camp. And that's when I really started advocating for Jewish issues on top of the other things I had been writing about previously.
You know, it's funny, we have a lot in common. I'm a lawyer, and the scholarship, my main scholarship area has been writing about women's rights. I've written about LGBTQ rights as well. The thing that turned me, I'm straight, but the thing that turned me on to it was seeing a movie that you were probably a baby, but this movie, Trembling Before God. And that movie, I don't know if you ever saw that, but that movie really got to me and made me really interested in those issues and the people who have suffered specifically in the Jewish community with being LGBTQ, yeah. Especially in the Orthodox Jewish community. And, you know, it's obviously still an issue today, something that is very important to me, which is why I write about it occasionally. So it seems like we have a lot of the same interests, actually, which is nice. Okay, so take me back. All right, so I understand. So you took a little bit of a gap between what you were originally doing and then, you know, moving to the law school. So what made you decide to pick CUNY Law School? You said that obviously that they were interested in the progressivism that you like and that seemed to be more with your line of thinking and your politics and your social justice interests. Mm-hmm. But tell me what it was like when you got there. When you first started, what was your experience? Were there any red flags right away, or was it a good start? How did it start off?
Oh, yeah, there was tons of red flags, and I kind of ignored them, which is unfortunate. The first thing that happened that, you know, I sort of reasoned away with myself was that when I was just doing a tour, like I wasn't even a student yet, the student who was giving me a tour, like I pointed out that they had a Jewish Law Students Association bulletin board with things on it. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm so happy that this exists because I'm Jewish. And a lot of time in progressive areas, I don't like talking about that because I don't know how people are going to react. And the student was like, oh, yeah, well, we don't hate Jews. We just hate Zionists. And that should have been my first red flag.
Right.
But I ended up talking to him and conversing with him and being like, well, you know, that's not really what Zionism means to a lot of Jews. And, you know, just sort of explaining it. And he seemed to listen. He seemed engaged. And I thought, all right, maybe I will go here. Maybe, you know, people are in grad school now. Maybe they'll be more receptive. And I was wrong.
Now, let me ask you a question. You mentioned your J-Post, just to, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but mm-hmm. you mentioned something about that you said to him early on in your experience there that you're about Zionism. But I read in one of your J-Post, I believe, op-eds, that you did not identify actually as a Zionist at first. Did that happen before?
Well, yeah. I didn't really identify as a Zionist. I was sort of non-Zionist, but like I understood why people did identify with Zionism. Do you know what I mean? And I sort of, you know, realized that a lot of Jews do feel, you know, even if they don't call themselves Zionists, do feel a connection and affinity with Israel. And that's just basically the essence of what Zionism means to a lot of Jewish people is just, you know, the fact that Jews should be able to live in our ancestral homeland and we have a positive, you know, feeling towards the existence of it.
So were you, did you say you were agnostic towards Zionism when you got to CUNY Law School?
Yeah, I was kind of agnostic. Like I saw, I didn't really want to embrace the label because I wrote about this in my Jewish Journal article. It's sort of like feminism where like now everyone's like, yes, I'm a feminist. But if you remember, like not even 10 years ago, it was sort of like still a dirty word and people were like distancing themselves from it. And I made a parallel.
I was calling myself a feminist 20 years ago. Okay. Just letting you know.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I'm just saying in general, in, like, you know, the media and the general sort of culture, feminism has come a long way. It's like weird if you're not a feminist now.
Yes.
And I sort of just compared the sort of history of the word feminism and how fraught it was, and how if you ask people who hate women what it means, they're like, oh yeah, it means, you know, hating men and female supremacy and all this type of stuff. And that's not really what it means, and especially not what it means to most women. And I sort of compared that to Zionism, where if you ask someone that hates Zionists and hates Jews and hates Israel what it means, of course they're going to say, oh, it's a settler colonialist ideology that's built on oppressing and genociding Palestinians, or, right, you know, some crazy definition. That's not really what Zionism means to most Jews.
Right.
Made that parallel, and then, you know, I figured, like, I have embraced the term feminist long ago, like almost 10 years ago, so why shouldn't I embrace the term Zionist as well? So I sort of came to that revelation while I was at the law school, but no, I did not go into it. I was sort of, like you said, agnostic about Zionism, and just sort of like, yes, I believe Israel should exist, but I also believe a Palestinian state should exist, and very, you know, diplomatic about it. And I still am. I still believe a Palestinian state should exist, but I've just decided to embrace the term Zionist, especially if people are going to be calling me it anyway, whether or not I embrace it for myself. So.
I think people on our side of the aisle on this issue need to not be shy. And I'm not shy about this. I'm so glad you said what you just said, because the Palestinian civilians are victims. They absolutely are. There is not a question in the world that they're victims. There's not a question in the world that innocent Palestinians die. They are victims. And people hesitate on, you know, the Zionist side of the aisle. They should not, because they absolutely are. They're a victim of a horrible situation that they're born into. And so, you know, I mean, to say that they're not, but the problem is that you can admit that, and nobody cares that we admit that, because they just hate Zionists. You know, I have nothing against non-Zionists, but I do have something against people who discriminate against Zionists. That's a whole different
anti-Zionist, specifically anti. Like, if you're non, if you're sort of agnostic about it, that's fine. That's whatever. But if you're explicitly anti-Zionist, you explicitly do not believe that Jews have a right to have sovereignty and self-determination in our ancestral homeland, you know, and you don't believe that about any other sort of ethnicity or nationality of people, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's questionable.
I could tell from your writing also that you think in a unique way that I really admire a lot, and that's highly, highly sophisticated and intelligent. And I really appreciate that. Even in your writing, I could tell that this kind of discussion, we were going to have this kind of discussion, because you're nuanced. You know, you're not even ideological. You probably think you are ideological, but I don't see you that way. Because
I think I'm pretty nuanced. I'm pretty balanced.
You come off that way. I mean, I could tell. So let me ask you a question. So let's go back to your first semester. How did the rest of your first semester go at CUNY Law?
Oh my God, it was so bad. I hated it. It was traumatic. It was probably one of the worst experiences of my life, if I'm honest. It was just horrible to go every day, to wake up in the morning, take two subways, and go every day to a place where everyone hates you.
Well, what do you mean?
People that I hadn't even spoken to. Well, this one student in particular, not Nerdine, but someone that was very aligned with Nerdine, found my social media and took a screenshot, an out of context screenshot. I was upset about anti-Semitic trolls on Twitter. And I tweeted, sometimes this just makes me want to F off to Israel. And, you know, I put a little picture of the Broad City girls holding up the middle finger. And they took a screenshot of that and sent it around and was like, you know, basically labeling me as a threat to Muslim and Palestinian students, because I had tweeted that about nothing even at school, about something that was bothering me on the internet.
Right.
And they just took that out of context and rolled with it. And I had even the you know, the good Jews from the only anti-Zionist Jewish Law Students Association in the country approach me and basically be like, oh, well, we saw this tweet and, you know, like Muslim and Palestinian students are coming to us and asking us to talk to you because like they were like threatened by me and afraid of me.
Tweets. Can I ask you a question? Why were they coming across your tweets? Were they on to you for some reason? Like, why were they even seeing your tweets?
I think it's because screenshotted them was also very problematic in a different way. Like, I think this person just had a vendetta against me, because even before all this Zionism, anti-Palestinian, whatever thing that they wanted to, you know, drag me for, this person had, I had shared with her that I had written for a now defunct website that they had also written for. And I sent my articles and I followed them on Twitter. And I got this anonymous email being like, why were you writing about this when you're white? It was about Standing Rock. And I had like a unique perspective on it, because I knew someone who was there and got seriously injured. And, you know, like there was a reason that I was writing about it. It wasn't just, I'm a white person writing about this issue regarding Native Americans. There was a reason. And it was to advocate on behalf of that community during that time. But, you know, they took this article, they sent me an email being like, how dare you write about this when you're white and you're taking up room that belongs to people of color and all this. And I didn't know what to do with that, really. I went to the dean of students about it, because I was like, this is obviously from a student, it's from an anonymous email, and they're basically harassing me. And I think it was that student, the one that took the screenshot of me on Twitter and sent it around. And they admitted to doing that, like after I had left the law school, they admitted to doing that on Twitter. So
what happened as a result of that? So what happened because of the sharing that picture, that screenshot?
People like didn't want to mess, like talk to me. Like, I went into that situation so optimistic that I was going to make friends and have, you know, nuanced conversations and discussions and debates, but in a respectful manner, and figure things out and be the future generation of leaders, whatever. I was very idealistic going into it, and no one really wanted to talk to me. People looked at me funny, people pointed at me and like whispered about me, and like I could tell I was like actively being iced out. Whenever I had an idea, it would be shut down.
How did it get so widespread? Like, I would think something like this, maybe there's a small group of haters or whatever, friends. This sounds like it got really all around the school. Is that right? And why did it happen that way?
Well, CUNY Law School is pretty small. So it's not like there were thousands of people there. It was maybe 1,000 students altogether in all 3 years. Right? Like, my class was only 100-something.
But do you feel like there was a mobilized effort against you? Like, organized?
A little bit, yeah. Because after I left and after my article came out, they, like, had this petition that seemed very pointed at me. And they had this, like, event about, like, you know, we unequivocally stand with Palestinian students and stuff, like, right after my article had come out. And after my article had come out, I was still there for a couple days, and my one of my professors, even my contracts professor, she like took half an hour out of class to just like basically address the article without saying any names.
What did she say? She attacked you?
She was just like, oh, a lot of students have been coming to me wanting me to like reprimand this student, but like, we're not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. So let me like play this clip of like the Dalai Lama talking about like radical empathy or whatever, and then like open the floor to all the students who want to like talk about their experiences of oppression here at CUNY Law.
So they were upset about, to be clear, that you were writing about an issue that concerned you about Native Americans, cultural appropriation, basically. That's what
the student was initially upset about. Then they found my Twitter and saw that I was Zionist or whatever, pro-Israel, however you want to phrase it, what they think that is racist and Islamophobic and anti-Palestinian, which I'm not. And so it became something else. Like I said, I think this particular student did not like me from the jump and wanted to find a way to sort of bring me down a peg and put me in my place. And so that's why they collaborated with Nardine, with all these other students. And there was sort of this sort of collective effort against me during my time there and after.
Was there a PAC leader? Was Nardine one of the leaders? And what did they do to you?
I mean, I don't know. I guess I've never like really personally interacted with Nardine aside from the fact that she would give me these snide glances. But they, you know, they would gossip about me. I would see them like I was, you know, waiting to ask the professor a question one day. And I, you know, looked out into the sea of students and saw a couple people pointing at me and talking amongst themselves. You know, when I wrote my article, a whole bunch of them commented things about how racist and Islamophobic I am, about how dangerous I am, about how I should like get out of the school and leave them alone. And they had this bake sale that I wrote about in my article where they thought I was like stalking them and went to complain about me to the dean of students because I had to go. They had it at the base of the escalator. My class is on the base floor, the first floor. And my locker was on the third floor. So I had to go up to my locker to get my laptop to go back down to class. And so they thought by virtue of the fact that I had to go up and down the escalator a couple of times to get my stuff and go to class, that I was like monitoring them and stalking them.
Wow.
And oh, I took a picture. Some girl had this really ugly Free Palestine hoodie that was said Free Palestine in the Simpsons font. And I took a picture of it. It didn't have her face in it. Didn't have any identifying information. I was just like, oh, look at this ugly sweater. And I took a picture of it and posted it on like Reddit bad designs. And they found that and they were like, oh, look at you stalking people and her, like, you know, this and that. It's what I call the tale of the two hoodies, because then Nardine threatened to light some man on fire because of his hoodie.
Right.
And they all stood behind her.
Right.
So, you know, I took a picture of an ugly hoodie and I was basically, you know, crucified for it.
Right.
So,
did you ever feel physically threatened?
Oh, yeah. Nardine says violent things all the time. Of course I did.
But to you personally, was there ever a situation at school where you felt you were worried about your safety? Was there any specific incident or anything that was going on suspicious around you that you actually were like looking behind your back or concerned about your safety?
I mean, not to that extreme. Dream, but I, you know, was always worried like, well, what if she runs into me when I'm on the subway platform or something like that coming, like not on the physical campus, but nearby, and I run into her, you know, I'm always like, what would I do? How would that play out? You know, would she hurt mm-hmm. me? Would she say anything? Like it did run through my mind, but there was not a specific instance where I was like, oh, I'm going to be jumped right now or anything.
Now, you were the same year. You were a 1L with Nardine,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Line up for people who are not going to know, and I don't know either. What was going around about Nardine publicly at the time you were in the same class with her?
Like, oh, you're saying you were scared. Her. Yeah. They loved her. They loved her. They loved her. She was very well known in CUNY undergrad. For her whole like Zionists out of CUNY campaign. And then she founded Within Our Lifetime, the organization that explicitly discourages talking to Zionists. And they loved her and they supported her. And after my article came out, they were like sending the links to donate to her organization around. All the student groups, and even like many professors signed their petition about being unequivocally in solidarity with Palestinians. And they just loved her. That's why they voted for her to be the speaker at the commencement.
Do you think that your experience would have been different if she wasn't at the school?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
I don't know. I just have a feeling that if she wasn't such a pervasive member of the 1L class that I was part of, there might have been more room for me, you know, in general there. If that makes sense.
You think she... So, I mean, I think...
So before I had even gotten there, I was worried about the anti-Zionism. And I had spoken to someone who was at the Jewish Law Students Association at the time. I remember speaking on the phone to him. And he was like, oh yeah, like we have Students for Justice in Palestine, but they're not really active, this and that. Like, so there, it doesn't seem like there was a strong pro-Palestinian presence at the law school until Nardine came and sort of took the reins of that.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Is sort of my understanding of it.
That, and also made it very different. Also made it more threatening and more violence inciting.
Right, yeah. Right. Because it was no longer sort of passive SJP. It was like very active. active SJP. Like, she would bring it up all the time in our criminal law class about Palestine. It had nothing to do with the topic. We're talking about American criminal law.
Right, which she did in her commencement speech, too. She kept bringing it up. It had nothing to do with commencement.
Right. Yeah. Her commencement speech had nothing to do with commencement. It was just about how Zionists have attacked her and Zionists are, you know, conspiring against her and they all have ties to Israel. It was very conspiratorial.
So she was doing this in the middle of law classes. Did you or anybody else ever speak up to oppose her on any of these things?
I went to the dean of students like 4 times to be like, hey, I don't feel comfortable with this person. They, you know, they have a history of saying violent things. You know, I'm being sort of iced out by the students because of this, and I just don't feel like safe around her. Like, I should be in classes with her. And they were just like, oh, well, sorry that you feel threatened by other people's free speech. Bye.
Did she ever say anything threatening in class?
She talked about how, like, the first day of criminal law class, she raised her hand and talked about how all Palestinians in Israeli prisons are martyrs and everyone in Palestine loves them and makes murals for them because they're, you know, heroes and martyrs.
Did she, and this is a crazy question, I know, but did she, aside for all this stuff, the radicalism, does she seem intelligent in class?
Is it bad if I say no?
Well, I just think she's radical, and is she a good student?
And I don't know, because I only really had like a couple classes with her, the big classes that everyone was in. I didn't have any of the smaller classes with her, thankfully. But
it sounds like she was dominating the classes, talking about all sorts of other things.
Yeah, but like, she's speaking from a place of propaganda. She's not speaking from a place of true intelligence, right, or nuance or understanding of the situation.
How did the professor let her get away with that? If they're asking a contract question, you know, how did they let her? They just let her talk about all sorts of stuff without interrupting? I mean, I don't understand.
They agreed with her, so they let her go on.
Oh my gosh. So what led to, so did you, now you only stayed less than one semester? Like what led to the
events? I was there a semester and a couple of weeks, a little over a semester.
So talk about what led up to your actually leaving and what led you to leave and how you had to leave.
Basically, like, after my article came out, everything I wrote about my article got worse. And then on top of that, like I said, I, like, you know, it wasn't really a good fit for me, law school in general, and I was having a really hard time. Like, I have a journalism background, and adjusting to legal writing was a huge challenge for me. So on top of, like, struggling in the actual classes, there was just this huge culture of sort of demonizing me and, you know, me being like a pariah on campus, almost.
I mean, obviously, one thing is going to affect the other, right? You're not going to feel like...
Right, so, like, yeah, on top of not doing well academically, I just didn't feel any level of support or camaraderie.
Well, you had no system with which to succeed there. I mean, law school is hard enough without having to deal with that. I mean, you know, for anybody. So how did you tell them, if you did, like, how did you let people know you were leaving?
I mean, I went to the academic dean, different dean than the dean of students, and I was basically like, I want to take a leave of absence. And I was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. Say I'll come back in a year. But, like, I knew I wasn't going to come back in a year. And I took a leave of absence and I just sort of loaded up my locker and left.
Was there anybody at the school who was supportive of you? Any student, faculty, any administrator?
I had a couple friends. I use the term friend very loosely because they, like, completely distanced themselves from me after I left and, like, never checked in with me, never anything. So very, like, fair weather friends. But no. Like, and if there were, they were too afraid to say anything, because after my article came out, a few people reached out to me, emailing me, messaging me on Facebook, basically being like, hey, like, I went to CUNY Law, or I went to CUNY in general, and I had this similar experience. And then when I was trying to pursue legal action with the Brandeis Center, they were like, oh, well, in order to build a case, we have to, like, establish a pattern, and we would need to talk to a couple other people who've had these experiences, but no one wanted to come forward and talk to them. So we couldn't build a case, and I couldn't pursue legal action.
Well,
at least in that way. At least in that way.
Because I did. We're seeing.
Yeah, now we're seeing a pattern. Now we're seeing a pattern. But this was, you know, in early 2020, there was not a, you know, a pattern to be found. No one wanted to talk about it.
So do you think? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, but like I ended up filing my own complaint with the United States Department of Education, a Title VI complaint, and they are investigating CUNY law now. So, I mean, it took a really long time, and I had to be on the phone with these people from the DOE for like hours and tell them, like, go through everything, like case by case. And, you know, they found enough that they're going to investigate at least one of my accusations, which was that, you know, the faculty did nothing to protect me.
Yeah.
Which is true.
And the administration.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. Do you, one thing I missed on asking earlier, I wanted to ask you, do you feel like Nerdine was the driving force behind a lot of the you becoming an outcast there? Do you think she was the main force behind it?
I mean, aside from the person who originally started this whole thing with the screenshots sending around and sending me that anonymous email, yes, I do. Because she definitely revamped the Students for Justice in Palestine presence at the school and, you know, had a lot of friends and a lot of people that were on her side there.
It was kind of stunning to watch. And by the way, we posted on our Save CUNY Twitter account the commencement speech. It went viral. And I'll tell you, it is really nauseating to see, you know, I know who she is. So that doesn't, you know, faze me because I know what to expect from her. But what really nauseated me was the applause and the cheering for the hateful things she was saying, not just from students, but from faculty members on the stage. And that was just sickening to me. I don't know if you noticed in the video, there's a faculty member on her right side, on Nardine's left, immediately to her left, wearing a mask and just like profusely smiling, you could tell, and cheering when she's saying that, you know, Israel and Jews kill Zionists. I mean, I couldn't believe that. I mean, do you know who that faculty member is and why on earth would she be taking such a horrific stance in support of these things?
I don't know who it was because she was wearing a mask. So I can't tell you if she was familiar to me or not. But yeah, it's disappointing, but not surprising.
I mean, it's frankly outrageous that it's one thing for a student to, I mean, she's a graduate. She's going to be a lawyer soon, unfortunately, you know, but she's a student and students make mistakes. It's another thing for people who are supposed to be mentors and leaders and show you, you know, the way to act civilly. And that was not, in my opinion, was not civil activity by a faculty member on a stage of commencement. I mean, I couldn't believe that. It was particularly nauseating to me to see the cheering and the applause from faculty of the hateful, bigoted, anti-Semitic things that Nardine was saying. Oh, yeah. Man. All right. Well, okay. I mean, so it sounds like you are happier with the career path you're on now. Tell people a little bit about what you're doing now and how this has changed your life, your experience.
Well, now I'm not even pursuing law, and I'm going to a Jewish school. I go to Yeshiva University's School of Social Work. It's called Wurzweiler, and I am graduating this summer. Social work is a much better fit for me, just in terms of, you know, what I want to do ultimately, and just the culture is a lot better. Being at a Jewish school has really relieved a lot of the stress. You know, just knowing that, you know, a lot of the students are Jewish, many are Orthodox, and, you know, many, you know, visit Israel or have family there or, you know, even attend classes there because Yeshiva has, you know, classes in Israel. And so Israel is much more of like a normalized part of the culture there. And, you know, it might not be as diverse of an institution as CUNY Law, but, you know, it's somewhere that I feel like I can relax at least the Jewish part of myself, if that makes sense. Like, I don't have to feel like I'm on guard because of my, you know, cultural and ethnic identity.
Right.
Like I did when I was at CUNY.
Right. Well, I'm glad that you were able to, you know, choose a path that works for you. And I want to tell the listeners who may not know that you were named one of the Allgemeiner J100. So good for you. I mean, really a testament to your courage. And there really aren't enough people who are courageous enough to come out and tell stories like this. So I appreciate you. And the Allgemeiner certainly did when they named you to the J100. That's a really cool distinction.
Thank you.
And is there anything else that I missed that you want to tell people? Because, you know, I don't know all the details of what you went through, but what did you take out of this whole story? What do you want the people listening to know about this whole situation?
Be wary of CUNY. I know that really sucks to say because CUNY was founded in part because of Jew quotas at schools like Columbia and Harvard. You know, CUNY sort of came out of that, and there's such a rich Jewish history at CUNY, but, you know, at Brooklyn College, at Hunter, at so many other campuses, CUNY campuses, this sort of hatred has been boiling for years now. And, you know, Nerdine is sort of just showing, is the bubbling over of it, if that makes sense, because people are starting to pay attention now that she's the commencement speaker and she's going to be a lawyer soon. But she's been doing this for years. And I would just be careful if you go to CUNY and, you know, don't be visibly Jewish at CUNY, as much as that sucks to say. It just is not the safest place for us right now.
Well,
unless you're a good anti-Zionist Jew, that is.
Yeah, it's chilling words, but I can't disagree with the word of it. And you really are courageous, and I really appreciate you coming on. And I know you're going to have a great career because you're a very highly intelligent person and a compassionate person. I know that from your tweets also. And thank you so much for your time, and I wish you the best in your career.
Yeah, thank you.
Jeff Lax back in the studio. Great job by Rafaela Guns. Thank you so much, Rafaela, for coming on. You really are an amazing, wonderful example of courage and chilling words that you offered at the end there, but they're true. They're true. And a lot of people feel the same way. I know parents sending their kids to CUNY are worried and feel the same way and have that concern. And that's all the more reason why we have to fight now to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else ever again, what you went through, Rafaela. So thank you again. I want to just mention again before we go, please go to iPetitions.com. iPetitions.com. We're on the homepage. We're featured on the homepage, Fighting Jew Hatred at CUNY. And the petition is to demand that CUNY adopt the IRA definition of anti-Semitism. It's called End Jew Hatred at CUNY. Demand that CUNY adopt the IRA definition of anti-Semitism. So please go to iPetitions.com. You'll see it on the homepage. Click on it. It takes you all of 10 seconds to sign the petition to get this all-important IRA definition adopted by CUNY. Thank you so much for that support in advance of doing it. And don't forget holyjerky.com. Amazing jerky. And if you follow keto, amazing keto jerky that they have out. Just don't buy all of it because I still want some left for me. And don't forget to use my code Jeff10 for 10% off. It was great to have all of you, and good to be back after that long vacation the last couple of weeks. And we look forward to seeing you all again. We'll see you tomorrow night live at 10 p.m. Thursday night on 620 a.m. WSNR. And next week, next Wednesday night, back to our usual time, 9 p.m., 6:20 a.m. Have a great, great week, everybody.